on this episode of Edge of the Web.
And then once you're on camera, worry about the audience, not you. Put yourself in a position of how can I serve the audience? And it's amazing how you watch that stage fright go away.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
Well, welcome back to The Edge. We're broadcasting from downtown Indianapolis at Edge Media Studios. Every week, we're bringing you the latest trends in digital marketing as well as marketing influencers. You can check out all the recent shows at edgeofthewebradio.com. We're powered by Site Strategics, your digital marketing pioneer specializing in the agile digital marketing strategy and execution. If you want to know more about what that is, because people scratch their head all the time about that, Give us a shout. But simply stated, it's results-based and responsive marketing. So we're executing agilely. We're adjusting the tactics that we're deploying each and every month for our clients as we experiment inside of the marketing space and finding better and better conversions for your bottom line, basically. So if you want to learn more, go over to Site Strategics, S-I-T-E, strategics.com, and we could even jump in and have an hour conversation with you free of charge. Just you might even get a few pointers of what you can use for your own online business. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. I'm the CEO of Site Strategics as well as Edge Media Studios. The reason why we do this show is multiple facets, but the main point is education, making sure that our listeners and our watchers know about digital marketing tactics, and we break it apart, demystify very ethereal concepts when it gets down to search engine optimization or search engine marketing. And we talk to the best influencers and the best subject matter experts that are in the field around the world. So we're very proud to be able to be an award-winning podcast, and it's only because of listeners like yourself and watchers like yourself that are paying attention to who we're talking to and really using these techniques to better their online experience. So let me introduce to you a few people in the studio. We've got Thomas Broadbeck, Director of Digital Media.
Hey.
Bam. Got it.
First time ever.
We also have AJ Ablog. How are you doing, AJ?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
AJ is one of our videographers and a brand unto himself. He does a fantastic job of narrative and storytelling from the video aspect. We also have our guest who's on the line straight from Hollywood, I believe, David H. Lawrence the 17th. Sir, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm awesome. Feeling good. Got the coffee going.
That's good.
Thank you.
Couldn't tell.
Hey, you want to check out all of our audio platforms. If you're listening to the podcast, thanks so much. We certainly appreciate all of our listeners. Check us out at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Acast, Player FM. Anybody else that we're missing?
You can name them.
There's all the audios.
Napster?
I don't think we're on Napster. And for our audio audience, we certainly implore you, jump into the live cast that we're doing each and every Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, so you can actually participate in the show. We are certainly opening up our doors of commentary, and if you want to ask some questions of our guests, that's where you do it. So as much as we love the download audience, jump online into the space, and we're certainly going to interact with you. And on top of that, we're even giving away some great stuff. So here, this segment is actually brought to you by our sponsor at Ahrefs. If you want to actually get passive, consistent traffic from Google that converts into customers as well as sales, Ahrefs has all the tools and data to be able to help you with that. So head on over to ahrefs.com, and you can take their free 14-day trial. And make sure you actually check out their academy as well. But here's the deal. They're giving away on our show a fantastic tool, a full year membership to Ahrefs. It's about $179 a month, equaling over $2,000 a year. I can do that math. So there.
Good job.
Thank you. How do you win? How do you win? Tom, how do you win this fantastic prize?
We've got a great conversation today. So the winner of the best question or comment on the Facebook thread will win the free year subscription. So definitely just enjoy the conversation and leave your comments and questions for David or for AJ or for us. And and we'll weave them into the show.
We will weave deftly, right?
That's right.
All right. Hey, David, we're about to go through some news. You ready for some video discussion news coming up?
You know, my day has not been complete until I hear the headlines from you guys.
Way to suck up, David. Way to suck up. All right. Let's take you through some latest digital marketing news.
I was very excited to start my reportings.
This week's trending topics.
I think we're going to have to use that that audio clip from David into our next intro.
Oh, that was it, you
it's
guys? That was it. That was so good.
Hey, from marketing land, from Amy Gessenhaus, Vimeo launches its first live streaming product and announces plans to acquire Livestream. Tom, tell us about this article.
So Vimeo Live is up for purchase now, I guess. They just purchased Livestream. Livestream was launched in 2007, and it's a great live stream platform. I see a lot of venues and churches like to use Livestream to broadcast their events and everything.
Right.
Yeah, so they just launched it. It's just Vimeo Live. It's Vimeo's CEO said in their press release, let me pull it up here. Live streaming is the number one request from our creator community this year, and we're focused on bringing a new level of quality and convenience and craft to this evolving medium. So it'll be interesting to see what benefits you get. I think it is $75 a month for their basic plan.
Really?
For Vimeo Live, and upwards of $300 to $350 bucks for their business and pro plans.
That's interesting. You got to understand the thing about what those tools are. I mean, obviously, Facebook Live, right?
Correct.
Free of charge until we know otherwise.
I mean, even if you look at their number one competitor, which is YouTube, I would say.
Yeah.
You can stream live off of them for free, or even Twitch, who was doing it before YouTube. I'll be very intrigued to see how they're going to implement this, especially if you're paying for it.
Yep.
Like, what benefits am I going to get, you know, if I'm paying $300 a month?
I see. Yeah. Absolutely. David, what are your thoughts about the monetization of the live stream?
So I think getting people to go over to Twitch for non-gaming content is going to be a challenge. So that's not really, in my book, a competitor. Yeah, they were there. They were an early mover. But I think they have a real uphill battle when it comes to going up against people who are most likely going to continue to offer these things for free. I think that you always run over that speed bump of, wait, I have to pay for this?
Mm-hmm.
This is the internet?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was all free. So.
Yeah, I've got some of their pricing here. $75 for their basic, and that's 5 hours of streaming a month.
Mm-hmm.
5 hours.
5 hours, yes.
Which means you can't have a daily show. You can't have an every so often show. You have to limit it to just one per week and less than 1 hour each time. So, you know, that to me, that's for $75.
That's $75. They have a they have a business account that's $300 a month. That's unlimited streaming. And 5 terabytes of archiving storage. And then there's an $800 a month plan where you can stream 24/7.
As I said.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that goes. I'm certainly not thinking that we're going to move Edge of the Web into...
You don't want to... You've talked about having your own 24/7 channel. $800 a month, you can do it.
You know, I used to have a 24/7 channel on XM and Sirius. When I did my radio show on technology, it was on CNET, and I used to do the East Coast morning show from 6 to 9 in the morning on the East Coast, and then I would do my nighttime show, which was basically me being a total jerk on the radio about technology, from 7 to 10. And then when CNET went away, XM said, hey, can we just run your shows 24/7 until we find a replacement? And I thought that was going to be for like 30 days at the most. A full year I was on XM and Sirius. 24/7, they'd run my live show, then they'd run yesterday's show, then the day before that, the day before that, and finally they work around to my live show again the next day. And I had people writing me saying, okay, you have pictures of the CEO in a compromising position, right? I just said yes.
Wow, you're literally my hero.
Thank you.
No, nobody got the reference?
Oh, I got it.
Ah, no. Come on. All right. Yeah, I kind of figured you would. All right. From Beach, Venture Beat, with Brandon, I'm sorry. By 140 character limit, Twitter's new 280 characters. The tweets actually work fine. So check this out, guys and gals. We're dealing with the post 140 character Twitter environment now. Say what you want about the new 280 character limit. It works for the author, and it's certainly starting to be embraced. The reception has been less than warm. The fact of the matter is that, as Jack Dorsey explained, a 280 character post recently. The 140 character limit was fairly arbitrary and based on the SMS limit at the time of 160 characters. Knowing now that you can send a page after page after page with SMS, right? Mm. So it's kind of pointless. Somehow the 150 character limit became part of the tech lexicon, and it was a way to force people to be brief and get to the point, which is exactly the same thing. Be brief, get to the point, and now we have double the amount of space. Double the amount of hashtag usage, double the amount of inane banter inside of a series of tweets. So, is this the arbiter of doom?
I think it's their last push. Honestly, if Twitter is, I really do feel like Twitter has been declining. And even if you look at some of the statistics, people are using it less and less and less.
Sure.
And this might be their last push, you know, to stay relevant.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the 280. I wish I had it just so I can just play with it. But the people I've seen play with it, they make like the one character per line thing. So it's like four scrolls to get through their tweet.
Oh my god!
Because they're being super annoying. And just one other point I wanted. Oh, the one thing I thought was funny when Jack Dorsey tweeted out his tweet saying they had 280 characters. His tweet was 280 characters, and somebody went through and edited out his tweet to make it 140, and they said the same exact point. I thought it was kind of funny.
Oh, that's funny.
And he retweeted it, and he thought it was pretty funny, too. But
David?
Twice as much room to misspell.
There you go.
You got double the chances that a politician is going to say something stupid.
Yeah, that's very true.
Do you think they gave him the 280 limit?
God, they probably trimmed him down to like 10.
Given the political situation at Twitter, which is like, you know, 99% very San Francisco liberal, I think they're holding meetings on a daily basis saying, A, what do we do? On the flip side, B, thank God he's keeping us relevant.
Exactly. That's the only thing, the only reason why people go back to Twitter.
He chose Twitter instead of Facebook, and thank God he did that as opposed to Vine. Can you imagine success? So really, I want to keep Vine relevant.
Very well done. Nice. Very well done. Now you're absolutely right. I don't want to say they're on life support. Maybe they're just on Trump support, right?
I think they're a lot healthier than people give them. You know, we have this tendency, especially in when you're on the edge. We have this tendency to look at acceleration rather than actual operation. So the moment acceleration of anything, growth, usage, session length, as soon as that starts to decline, the company's dead. And we've seen over and over again that sometimes that's not true. Certainly Facebook isn't accelerating its users as much as it did in the beginning. But nobody seems to be, you know, yelling rest in peace Facebook. So I think that, you know, as long as Twitter can make a living, you know, there are some times when growth is overrated.
Hmm.
Once you get to the point where you have a nice stable business going, I like that. I'm not, you know, maybe I'm just like not a good enough capitalist, even though I'm a bald faced, you know, libertarian capitalist, you know, I just feel like at some point we tend to give too much emphasis to the idea of growth as opposed to sustenance and quality and manageability. You know, how many companies have we seen that have grown so fast that they become unmanageable? Look at Uber.
Mm-hmm.
So
No, you're absolutely right. And performance metrics, that's a very, I don't say archaic, a very rudimentary perspective just to see ascendance or ascension or user acceptance. Because at some point in time, everything plateaus. It's yep. just the innovation and the utilization of these platforms, right? Mm.
And the more players that you have, the less of a pie there is to divvy up.
Right.
One of the big problems that we have in the world of entertainment is viewer attention fragmentation. It's like crazy, man. I remember back in the 80s when the internet became an optional entertainment channel, you know, the networks were like, yeah. Now, oh my gosh, you've got 90 different things when you wake up in the morning that you have the option of playing with. And so the less room all the competitors have, the more likely it is that you can't hold them to the same standard you did even a year or 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. So there's a life cycle of all of this. And
please say that I am absolutely right as often as you can during this
interview. I'll just repeat it. Game on. All right. Last article, Search Engine Journal from Matt Southern. The YouTube changes that are coming through, there are new rules applying to videos with external links. Tom, what's this all about?
So here from the article, Matt Southern says, YouTube's adding restrictions on which accounts are able to add external links at the end of their videos. External links are added to videos in the form of end cards. And now there are requirements that every account needs to meet in order to be able to use those end cards. And those requirements are you must be a YouTube partner program, must join the YouTube partner program, and your channel must have 10,000 total public views, which I think is a requirement to even get into the YouTube partner program. So you pretty much have to be in the YouTube partner program.
Right. And if you're already a pretty big YouTuber, like 10,000 views is nothing. It's nothing at all.
Yep. So, yeah. So if you want to start using those end cards there at the end of your videos.
Well, for external links,
For external links, yeah. Yes. So, yeah. So you can point to landing pages or whatever.
Because a lot of YouTubers use this for is Patreon, because with the whole adpocalypse, 1.0, 2.0, whatever you want to call it, you know, they've been going to Patreon. I mean, almost all the YouTubers that I subscribe to are on Patreon now. Yeah. Honestly, if this could be the death of smaller ones until they get big, you know, because they're going to have to find another way to make money off of, you know, their videos until you get to that 10,000, which, I mean, again, really isn't that much. But, you know, for someone like me trying to build, it's going to be hard.
Dave, what do you think?
So I prefer David, but thank you. You're going to have to wait until the end of this video broadcast for the end card to get my opinion.
Well played. All right, David. What we do want to know is what you think.
Here's the thing. Dave is the guy who changes your oil because you're too lazy to do it yourself. David is the guy who shows you how to sparkle on camera.
Ooh, all right then. Well, we're going to get ready for that.
I'm going to, there's a lot of fire in between going on over here.
Well, we want to learn how to sparkle, and you too can learn how to sparkle as you pay attention to the video shows that we have. But on top of that, joining our newsletter, you can jump in there free of charge and be able to listen to all of David's key performance metrics in our next newsletter. So you got to jump in there and pay attention and subscribe, because subscribing is free. And we actually have a lot of news regarding who the news items we're talking about, as well as who's upcoming on the show and who we just talked about. So jump on to edgeofthewebradio.com and join our newsletter. All right. Follow all the featured training topics over at edgeofthewebradio.com. But first and foremost, let's deep dive with this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with actor and storytelling coach David H. Lawrence the 17th.
Now there's David H. Lawrence the 17th. He's a professional voiceover talent, and you may actually recognize him from Heroes, Lost, and more recently you may actually have heard his voice in the movie Cars 3, which I do recognize because it got four bloody kids. And I knew you from somewhere. Just kidding. Hey, David actually had to develop an audio and video communication course that's called Camera Ready You, where he helps actors and marketers improve their on-camera performance. So, David, tell us a bit of your backstory.
Well, I was in radio for 35 years. You know, never had the gumption to head out. And I say gumption because I was raised in Cleveland, Ohio. And as you know, Ohio is the part of Indiana that nobody wanted. So, you know, we took it. I didn't have the gumption when I was in my 20s to go to Hollywood. I wanted to go to Los Angeles and become an actor. And I just, you know, I played it safe and I did radio, which was fine. But then in 2003, I decided the weather in the Washington, D.C. area where I was living was just a major problem because they have absolutely no will to remove snow. And they go, oh, it never snows here. And it's like you're right on the Chesapeake Bay. When it snows, it shuts the city down for 2 weeks. And so I thought, you know, I want to move. I want to see if this gorgeous face and this amazing physique could be successful on camera as I was already successful on radio. I kept doing my radio show as my survival job, and my survival job was a network, three network radio shows, talk show, two countdown shows on satellite and on terrestrial radio, and our lead affiliate in terrestrial radio was WGN in Chicago. So, you know, I had a nice little sort of war chest and the ability, my show was on at night, so I could actually do all my training and auditioning during the day. And I used what I call the Abraham Lincoln method. Abraham Lincoln once said, in Indiana, I think, if I had an hour to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first 45 minutes sharpening the axe. And that makes short work of what you have to do. And so what I wanted to do when I came to Los Angeles is not try to get an agent right away, not try to jump in and do auditions when I didn't know what I didn't know. So I trained for 4 years, and then, you know, I got seen by an agent in a play, which never happens in Los Angeles. Nobody believes that process. And I said, I don't think I'm ready to audition yet. And he goes, oh, no, you're ready. You're ready. And within 6 months, I booked Heroes, which was my first job on network television. That job was supposed to be one episode, and I was supposed to be killed. And they ended up liking the first day's shoot so much that the writers went back and wrote me into the rest of the series. So 3 seasons I was on.
Wow.
And I think it's, you know, part and parcel to, you know, knowing that this is what I wanted to do and knowing how to get there, knowing and then doing it, right? I think the biggest chasm that we have to cross is the chasm from knowing what you have to do, which is hard enough to get to, right? You know, I want to do that, but I don't know how to do it. So once you learn how, it's then actually taking the risk and doing it. You know, you guys have decided you want to do this podcast as well as all the other things in your life. You'd mentioned in the pre-show, one of you, that you have 4 kids. You know, maybe you want to do that, but you don't know how. You figure out how, and then you're like,
wow. I figured out how to have 4 kids.
So, you know, I think that especially professionally, we get to the point where we're like, yeah, I'd like to be a social media manager for a major Fortune 500 company. How do you get there? So you figure out how to get there, and then what do? Do you actually do it? How many people are sitting in the middle of mid-America? I use Paducah, Kentucky as the example. No offense to anybody from Paducah. you know, there's a guy that wakes up on a Tuesday morning and goes, by God, I'm going to go be an audiobook narrator, or I'm going to go be an on-camera talent. They don't even say that. They say, I'm going to be a star. And the question is, how do you get there? And so once I'd started working and I had had some success, people were asking me, how did you do that? And so the first thing I created was something called VO2GoGo, which is a voiceover training system that has won the Backstage Reader's Choice Award for 4 years in a row. It basically takes you from zero to hero in voiceover. And as I was sharing that with people, and I've been teaching that course here in Los Angeles and around the world for about 10 years, they were like, yeah, but what about the stuff you do on television? You know, what about that? You know, and I'm like, ah. Just like I did with voiceover, when people go, hey, why don't you teach people how to do voiceover? Who wants to hear what I have to say? But with on camera, what I started doing was talking at places like Social Media Marketing Week and, you know, marketer conferences, performance conferences within our industry as well. And what I noticed was that everybody wants to know how, and they want that that push to actually do it, be great on camera. You know, we've been raised with this notion that, you know, everybody has smartphones, so everybody should know how to take advantage of Vimeo Live the moment it becomes available, right? And they know exactly how to do things. Well, the truth of the matter is that you don't. Most people don't. They don't have the training. They don't think they need the training, right? Most people just grab their smartphones, hold it, and shoot up their nose, and that's the end of it in portrait mode, right?
Right.
So, you know, look at all the Vine stars and the original YouTube stars. They didn't know to turn their cameras to landscape mode. They didn't understand how to light. They didn't understand the rule of thirds. They didn't understand strength in posture when on camera. But these are all the things that actors learn as part of the process of working the camera the way you'd work a mic if you were doing voiceover, or an audience if you were doing live theater. And when I would share these little tiny secrets with marketers, I was mobbed after my speeches. Like, where's your class? Where can I take this course that you have? And I don't have a course. I'm just telling you what I do. What's wrong with you? That's what I would get most of the time. And I was tired of that. So I put together Camera Ready You.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, I mean, this is all available online, and it was certainly going.
No.
Oh, back up.
Yeah. It's not available yet. I am still producing it. But what I am doing is creating a community around being great on camera. And this should be ready in a couple of months. I keep saying that. But the idea that, and I keep getting input from people as to what they want. And I use my judgment about whether or not I'm going to include certain things. Mm-hmm. But the class is going to talk about art, commerce, and science. So the art of being on camera, the physical nature, the skill set of doing on-camera work, the business of the business, whatever your business is. If you're an actor, if you're a business person, if you're a marketer, if you're a politician, if you're an advocate, one of the roles we're going to look at is how to make a great dating site video. So they're all roles that you play on camera. And I want to give you a fighting chance at sparkling on camera, shining on camera. And so even in the way this shot is right now, I'm applying some things that people might not catch. For example, you guys know about the rule of thirds because you employ it in a very interesting way. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually right in the middle of the frame like this. I'm off to the side and I'm employing the rule of thirds. My left shoulder is forward so that you're reading from right to left into my face, as opposed to straight on like a mugshot or the other way around. And the sort of the proof of this is any talk show you want to talk about, Tonight Show, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, anything. Where does the host sit? Behind a desk, to the right, facing to the left as people look at the frame.
Mm-hmm.
Except for James Corden, who is trying to be Graham Norton.
Yeah, that's very true.
If you look at classic portraiture, the people are sitting like this, because you read strength into a face. If you read out of a face from the left-hand side, it's weaker. So those, and I tell people what to do with their hands, what to do with their eyes, how to not make an overly creepy connection staring at the camera. all of these, when I would share all these things, business people would be like, this is what actors do, this is awesome. And then I would point out, well, look at the examples on television that you see all the time. Now, the reverse is also true. When I would talk to actors about how to do their business better, I've always been an entrepreneur my entire life. And so being an actor is nothing more than being a specialized entrepreneur. And most actors are brought up with the idea that if they're good at business, it's going to negatively affect their ability to do art. And that couldn't be further from the truth. So they're hungry for ways to make their business better. And then finally, the science is the technology. How do you use the technology to look great? How do you do cheap lights? How do you do a great camera? How do you do great sound? How do you sound great? And when you do that, when you have all three of those legs on the stools, then it's a nice solid base with which to work. And please let me know if I'm going too long on my answer.
No. I wanted this actually to frame the entire conversation, to be honest with you. So this is fantastic. Let me ask you this real quick. As you're talking about these key elements, the key legs of the stool, what are some of the least important factors for video? Because, I mean, people can get so hung up on some fixations that aren't, they don't really even translate correctly to the video, to the interaction of video. So can you give us some thoughts there?
Yeah, a couple things. My number one question, the number one question that I'm asked when I take questions is, what camera do you use?
Yeah, that's the big one.
My God, it's so, as if the camera that I use has anything to do with looking great. And the truth of the matter is, if you can take a little lens cleaner and wipe the lens off on your smartphone is a better camera than you ever would have thought possible. And I'm talking about the selfie side, not the other side, not the 4K side, which is just overkill for almost everything that we do.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one. Number two, you know, this is a family friendly show, right? So we don't swear. Is that right?
Hell yeah.
Okay. All right. So there's a concept that is often taught in acting class where poorly and incorrectly, where the way to create a connection with the other actor is to lock eyes and never break the gaze. You know, used in very small amounts, that's appropriate. But for the most part, in normal conversation, and normal conversation is what works best on camera, we look off to the side when we're thinking about things, we're trying to remember things, we maybe look up and to the left. You know, when we're self-reflecting, our eyes drop and our chins drop. All those things are things that get thrown out the window when people go to work on camera. They think, oh, I have to be a better version of myself. I have to be a more polished, awesome version of myself. And that can really be debilitating. Mm-hmm. So what I tell people is use the natural, awesome you that you're able to hold attention in a party conversation with on camera. And they're like, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. Really? You know, so those are some of the things that, I mean, there's a ton of things, a ton of rumors and myths that I dispel during the course of the entire curriculum, but those are two of the big ones.
Oh, fantastic. Let me ask you this here, because you do focus.
Now I see. Next time we do the next time I see this podcast,
yep,
the guy in the middle is going to be the guy on the right.
You got that right. I'm already reorganizing it based on our conversation. No. What does it mean to be authentic? When we're talking about tips and tricks, and you're taking us there with the natural way that you'd be a, you know, you'd be at a party, right?
Exactly.
In this realm where we're finding the polished Apple video is not connecting nearly as much to the brand loyalist as kind of breaking that edifice and actually having that evangelist or whoever's championing the brand, being authentic and creating authentic connections. What does that mean to you?
So I think it's important to sort of categorize certain things. Apple engages in what I call product porn. You know, their videos are just dirty, sexy love letters to their products.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different category than a person being on camera trying to reach an audience. And, you know, reaching an audience can take so many different forms. You know, if I was doing a coaching session with a client, for example, that's my audience of one. And I want to reach them and help them the best I can. The way I would do that in a coaching session is very different from the way that I would do that in a marketing video or a pre-launch content video if I'm launching a product or a service. In terms of the goal, you know, the goal with a coaching session is to help somebody be better at what they do. The goal with a marketing video may be to, you know, make sure that the viewer thinks really highly of your product and is more likely to consider it as an option for purchase, and everything in between. You know, politicians and advocates and critics, even the unboxers that you know show you how cool this new product is and they open it up right in front of you. That's reaching an audience in a very similar way. And so the idea of authenticity is not something that is a tip or a trick. Mm-hmm. It is getting rid of all the tips and tricks that you've learned about how to be authentic and just be yourself. This is me, warts and all, unshaven, because I'm going in for an audition later today where they wanted stubble. And I grew this in the last half hour, so
like a chia pet. My gosh,
jealous.
The authenticity is like, you guys, when you are opening the show, there's this deep breath, and now I'm going to be an on-camera person. But then when you start talking to me, all of a sudden that facade goes away, and the very best performers on camera get that facade to go away as early as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the people that's best at it is Jimmy Fallon.
I was just about to,
when he comes out, you think he is so damn excited about all these people coming to his little location in New York City and watching his show, and you made it, you're here. You know, he completely connects from the moment he walks out. On this, I think there are some other people who are as plastic as they come, and they don't even lose the plastic when they're interviewing somebody and having a conversation. Whereas you guys, you know, you become authentic the moment you stop worrying about being authentic and just be yourself. And that takes a lot of courage, because people are not perfect. People have been trained to see professional actors creating a character, and so they think, oh, I got to do that. And the truth of the matter is that you don't. What you need to do is be the self that you are when you are connected and engaged and passionate about what you're doing. And if you just let those things be your intention and let those things be your motivators, look, you guys talk about, my mom would sit there and go, what? Vimeo, audience session, what? You know? But to your audience, you're enthusiastic about it. You have opinions about it. You want them to understand what you think, and you want to know what they think. Those are the things that you need to be authentic. There's a, you know, it's a long list of things to not do as opposed to a long list of things to be authentic.
No, I appreciate that. That's a really good perspective of. I mean, it's not what authenticity means to you. It's just got to drop the facade, like you said. Mm-hmm. You got to get into it and find your passion. Yeah. And if you're not dialed in with your passion about what you do, get the heck out of that lane, because you're never going to be able to connect nearly as well as finding where your passion really lies, right?
Yeah, I hear people all the time when they get on camera being very tentative. And I ask them, you know, if you were having a conversation with someone and you wanted to get your point across, would you walk up to them and say, excuse me, I was just wondering if I could talk to you for a second. Are you there? No. Don't do that. Hey, what's going on? Yeah, oh my God, did you see what happened, you know, last week at this? You are there.
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden this camera is in front of you. And you're not there. You're anywhere but there.
It's just, you know? It's just a window. That's what it is.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me take you another direction here. How can you counsel individuals on stage fright? Because that is, or camera fright for that. I mean, we're talking about the same thing, and maybe in a different vein. People just freeze, and some, you're talking about some people going plastic and just having that edifice. But when people freeze, and I can't move past
I was thinking more when I wrote that question, Aaron, is what AJ and I were doing a video, or AJ was doing the video with the client, and he's fine when you're talking like this, but as soon as AJ turned on that camera and asked him the question for the video, he clammed up every other word, and it was just...
Well, I think most of the time, people trying to be perfect, trying to be that better version of themselves, and the fear of failing at that. You know, the idea that if you're on camera, somehow it's going to go on your permanent record, and at some point you're going to be in the vice principal's office, you know, fessing up to what you did behind the gym. You know, video is just as disposable as any other medium. People freeze up when they're recorded on audio as well. And they also hate the way they sound because they don't understand that they're hearing their voice in a different way than when they hear their voice when they're speaking. So on camera, it's the same thing. You know, you have millions of triggers when you watch yourself on camera that can, like, the first time anybody's ever on camera, they don't freeze ever. You know, a baby doesn't sit there and go, "Wait, don't take a picture of me." You're just there, right?
Right.
But then once they acquire the curse of knowledge and they see how they look on camera, oh my God, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm 15 pounds, like, more than I thought I was, and I'm already 100 pounds over that. And what's going on with that mole on my face? You know, every little thing that you would worry about, you know, is there for you to lay bare and get crazy over. And so that becomes a cycle that makes people frightened to have their image recorded or to have their image broadcast. And all I would say to that is, get over yourself. You're not that important.
Ooh, I love it. I love it.
And I'm not saying that what you're saying isn't important. What I'm saying is how you look, that mole on your face, mm-hmm. the amount of weight that you're currently carrying, or the lack of hair that you might have. You know, these things can be both balcony and basement. They can be both positives and negatives. You know, if I was going up for a commercial where the breakdown, which is the description of the character, says the hero of the commercial is 25 to 35, fit, trim, relatable, great hair, awesome smile, white teeth. Well, that's not me. I'm a big, fat, old guy, right? That's it. But for some things, that's what's required. I'm not the most beautiful person on the planet. I mean, I get it. My job is to make good-looking people in my scenes look even better by contrast. This is not a joke. I'm not joking. When I play a villain on television, or when I play, you know, a comedic foil, I'm there to serve the story in a different way than the lead is, right? Most of my scenes in Heroes were with Hayden Panettiere, who played the cheerleader, who I called Barbie.
Ooh.
I don't know why they wrote that in, but it was awesome. And then also some other characters that came on later on in the series. But my job was to make her, to the audience feel that she was in danger. And so it wasn't about me as, you know, how do I look on camera? Am I looking awesome? It's how creepy can I look on camera? How creepy? Like, you're going in a completely different direction as to the motivation of what you're doing. And when you're doing a marketing video, you know, all you want to do is be the cheerleader for the product or service. You want to be the most enthusiastic person ever. And I'm not talking about infomercial enthusiasm. I'm talking about you really believe that this product or service is going to change someone's life. It's going to solve a problem that they have. It's either going to add pleasure or remove pain. And when you reveal that, when you reveal the secret of what you're doing so from a position of, look, I've got this great thing to share with you. And if you take your time and don't try to rush through it and don't worry how you look, I mean, do the things that you need to do to look good on camera and then forget about it. You know, when I come in and I sit down in my studio to do a session with somebody, I sit down, I turn my mic on, and I link up with you on Zoom. The lights are already set up. The microphone is already set up. The camera is already set up. And I don't have to worry about all of these things. Now, this has been honed over time. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, you can't keep a space in your residence that you can use 100% of the time to do videos. But setting things up, putting marks on the floor, setting things up shouldn't take longer than 5 or 10 minutes. And then once you're on camera, worry about the audience, not you. put yourself in a position of how can I serve the audience? And it's amazing how you watch that stage fright go away. Eventually, people who have stage fright go on stage, go on camera. And they do so when they overcome the idea that they have to worry about themselves. What you should be worrying about is who you're talking to. How is what you're doing affecting them? How is it benefiting them? How is it helping them not make a mistake?
Absolutely. That's such an introspection, and it's truth right there. We do have this narcissistic society that is so self-involved that by putting themselves on camera, they just magnify that introspection. So it's difficult to break them out of that shell into the real pursuit of what you're trying to do. But I mean, that's a great synopsis of why people get into stage fright mode, and they do have to just be true with themselves and just get over themselves, right?
I wish it was that easy to tell a client that.
Hey, you need to slap them around a little bit.
Get over yourself.
The way you talk to a client about it is get them centered on the audience.
Oh yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Who are you talking to? And it's always an audience of one, by the way. It's not an audience. It used to be in the old days. Ladies and gentlemen, from high atop the Statler Hilton Hotel in New York City, we come to you, the mass unwashed with our classical music. You know, that was the old days. Then Arthur Treacher started talking to people one at a time. This was in the 50s. He realized that his audience was massive, but they were massive in silos, right? They were not sitting in a big stadium taking in his show en masse. They were listening one at a time. So he started talking in second person. It's like, you know, I got it. You're already tired. It's like, what is it, 9:30 in the morning where you are? You got your husband off to work, your kids off to school, and you're exhausted. You're sitting there at your kitchen table. And women who were listening to his show in the 50s were sitting at their kitchen table going, how does he know, right? He goes, I got exactly what you need. Lipton tea. Just get up and walk over to the cupboard. I bet you got a box right in there. And if not, next time you go to the grocery store, pick up one. You take some Lipton tea and sip that joyous stuff, and boy, your day is going to be great. And that was a huge shift and totally illustrated the idea of appearing to really be concerned about an audience of one. You don't say you all, you say you. You are going to be affected by what I'm going to say.
Tom, do we have any tea? I just got, for some odd reason, I want.
You need some tea?
I need some Lipton tea now. We got some fish and chips.
Really?
Yeah. Well, David, when it comes down to podcasts, and because this is all the rage, and obviously it's not only the year of podcasts, this is literally the decade right now. Everybody's gearing into it. And it's also the livecast environment, and that's what we're actually demonstrating right now. It's podcast plus livecast plus post broadcast and all the things.
Higher production values than most people are capable of doing. You're in a studio with multiple cameras. It's a set, right? You've got a switcher going on. You got people, you know, working with you. A lot of people don't have those options, but go ahead with your question.
No, thank you. Well, what tip will you give a marketer to help them improve their interviewing skills? So for marketers that are executing podcasts, right? They have to interview guests, and this type of dialogue, right, that we're having it needs to be honed over time. You need to have that interviewing skill. What would you give as some guidance to individuals that are starting up their podcasts or trying to build a better resonance with their guests?
The number one piece of advice, and if you want to, I hate to name names, but just go watch Stephen Colbert for The Wrong Way to Do Things or Conan O'Brien in the old days for The Wrong Way to Do Things. Is be brief and be centered on your guest. So, you know, I think Stephen Colbert, and I love both of them. I'm not like denigrating them. I think they talk too much. You know, David Letterman was one of the best interviewers in the world. A guest would come out, you know, Samuel Jackson would come out, David Letterman would go, snakes on a plane. And let Samuel L. Jackson go for 5 minutes, right? When I did a podcast called Secrets of Screen Acting, and this book, which just changed my life, Secrets of Screen Acting, awesome. If you're an actor and you're watching, you've got to pick it up if you're going to do any film or television work. I contacted the author in the UK, and I said, hey, I'd like to do a podcast with you. And he said, great. So we did it. And all I did, it was a 5-minute podcast. You know, I believe in more often and briefer rather than less often and longer, especially when it comes to audio, because I don't want somebody to go, oh, if I listen to that, then I won't be able to listen to that, you know, 5 minutes. And what I would do is I would ask a question no more than 10 seconds. So Patrick, the frame of truth, you're all about that. Yeah. And then let him go for 4 minutes and 55 seconds, because my whole job was just to make sure that I gave him, I set him up to knock it out of the park.
Yep.
And so brevity and focus without sounding like you're reading, you know, Stephen Colbert and Conan O'Brien, I haven't watched him lately. I think he's gotten better. They will go on. Here's how they would ask that question. So I read your book, and I know you probably think I didn't read your book, but I did read your book, and I read about the frame of truth. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I've got to ask him about the frame of truth when I get him on the show. This frame of truth thing seems so, and he'll go on and on and on, insinuating himself.
Mm-hmm.
Question. And again, I love these guys, but just ask the question. Let the person answer and then follow up. Okay, so the frame of truth is what people see in the frame, and that's it. What's going on outside the frame can be anything, right? They don't see that. So they don't see that as the truth of what you're doing. And so when you follow up with that and go, okay, but how does somebody who's doing a podcast at home, how do they create the frame of truth? How do they work within that frame of truth? You know, you talk about framing people, the rule of thirds when you're moving out of the center, the lighting and so on, and the way you approach things. So I think number one, when you're doing a podcast that's an interview type podcast, because there's an awful lot of podcasts that have no interviews at all. Mm-hmm. It's just somebody that's talking about a subject by themselves. You know, be totally thinking all the time, what would a listener want me to ask at this particular junction of the interview? What would they want me to know? What would they want to know, right? And those are the two pieces of advice that I would say, be brief and be audience-centric.
Oh, very good. Last thought about podcasts, because you do try to move the guests from topic to topic, right? So suggestions on how to transition. I feel a bit of inception happening here because I'm about to actually transition. But how would you actually recommend interviewers guide the conversation with the transition? When do they get in and allow that guest so much time, but be able to move that podcast along?
So it depends. I mean, that's the answer with that. It depends on how long the guest has been rambling, if they've been rambling. And part of that is framing the questions so that they don't have to ramble, right? Asking more specific questions. You know, they say, you know, I've heard people say when they train interviewers, ask open-ended questions. Well, then you're going to get open-ended answers.
Yeah, that right. Yeah, absolutely.
What I would say is ask questions that have a little bit more focus. And once you get the answer that you're looking for, a great way to sort of transition between one segment and another is to make a declarative statement on how fantastic the guest was. And then in that process, move right on. So what I would say here is, wow, that was really great. I mean, I'm sure it's useful to so many people. We've got 3 more things that we need to talk about, and then, you know, manage it in that way. It's an acquired skill, but it's not a hard skill to have.
That is fantastic. And David, I got a couple more questions to ask you. What bugs you about your industry right now?
What bugs me about my industry? Which industry are we talking about?
Oh my gosh, stop it. So in broadcast, in Hollywood, for example, in broadcast, we're dealing with, you know, there's so many different fractionalized environments now of content where it used to be mainstream, right? Yeah. And you got a heck of a lot of players. Now we're getting into smaller serialized videos now, and that's sure. Actually taking off in an explosive way. But I mean, the transition and how people are making their way into these new media audience engagements now. What bugs you in that space?
I'll tell you, one of the things that bugs me is this idea of pandering to binge watchers. You know, it used to be that when you told a story on television, you had to wait for a week before you could see what was going on again. And my show, the one that I'm most known for, Heroes, was right on the cusp of that that watershed between the old way of network television's telling stories and the new way that included the internet and binge watching and not having that moment of a cliffhanger at the end of one episode setting up the next episode. Right now, it's kind of stupid to watch some shows as a binge watch because they replay, you know, previously on Breaking Bad, you know, they replay a good 5-10 minutes of the show from the prior week when it was on broadcast. And you're like, yeah, I just watched that. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to do that. and the idea that we as storytellers are now having to pander to people who demand that everything be available right now, that we have to open the kimono and we have to ruin what was a surprise for some people. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, and here's a great example of it. I'm actually binge watching Breaking Bad right now. And I don't want to do what happened to me to anybody else, but they do that X-ray trivia. And I love reading trivia. So I learned to watch the episode first because some of the trivia items would reveal something that happened later in the show, like somebody got killed or, well, what? You know, so I would wait till the end and then read all the things. And at the end, in one of the episodes in season 5, they talk about one of the main characters asking to be killed because he had gotten an offer to be on another show. He goes, hey, could you guys kill me so I can go do this other show? And they're like, no. And then that's where they could have ended it, right there. They could have just stopped right there. They said, no. But they went on to say, the character was killed in episode blah. And I'm like, what? What? Why did you tell me that? Why did you even let that be? And so I wrote Amazon Prime and I said, what the hell is wrong with you people? And they wrote me back this non-form letter saying, you are absolutely right. We're big fans of Breaking Bad as well. And to reveal that that character was going to be killed in episode blah of season blah, that was just irresponsible. And we're going to edit that immediately and get rid of that. We don't want that to happen to anybody else. And we really apologize for that being the case. I think somebody just wanted to be complete. Mm-hmm. Well, it isn't that. It is that the audience has taken it upon themselves via the idea of illegal downloading and binge watching and OTT options, you know, Hulu and Amazon and you know, YouTube Red and all that, you know, all of these original things that are options that are purveyed in a different way than network television normally was on a serialized basis. They want their stuff and they want it now. Mm-hmm. And what I'd love for producers to stand up and say is, yeah, no.
Well, I think you see that a lot with, I mean, if you look at AMC with The Walking Dead, you know, they do what, like half a year and then they take a break and then they do a half a year and then they go to their other show that's still Breaking Bad, just sure. 2.0, or Walking Dead 2.0.
Yeah.
But
Fear of the Walking Dead. Or Fear of the Dead.
Fear of the Walking Dead. But I'm curious, do you see, though, it could force producers to make stories in a different way, that it's shifting, that the way that
it has been that way for a long time. Ancillary production, web series. Like when I was on, even back in 2009-10, when I was on Heroes, we did a web series. Oh my God, a web series from a network television show, explaining what happened to my character between season 4 and season 5. And, oh my God, it was groundbreaking. Well, you know, there have been spinoffs and there have been supporting characters and series of things for centuries. You know, there's always been sort of serialized stuff. But I think the technology is affecting how people watch things, you know, how things are framed, because a lot of people are watching on much smaller screens and you can't do wide vistas of the prairie with a little tiny, you know, horse and wagon going across it. Can't see it. So it changes how the DPs, the directors of photography, actually produce the shows. And the storytelling changes as well. You don't have as many previously. You know, you don't have as many of those things. So it's you're absolutely right. It is already changing and will continue to change. Currently, we have more shows in production, over 500 shows in production. And we're talking about shows that have bankable stars in them. 500 shows in production right now, whereas in the old days, it was like, you know, 100.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Boy, this conversation, I love just this discussion because literally it gets the mind going of into spaces of production of content based on user wants. So you could literally see two different types of the same show. Sure. Being developed and provided. So whether or not you're a binge watcher or you're a serial watcher that wants to jump in each and every week, you could literally have two forms of the show starting to be disseminated by these production studios to match consumer demand. Can I ask you what excites you about your industry inside of production right now?
I think what excites me is the options that people have. You know, writers and directors and producers have never had more options than they do now when it comes to the amount of outlets that they have, the distribution offers that they have, the ways to monetize things. You know, used to be you needed a network to build a show. Well, YouTube partners changed that, right? Mm-hmm. And so everything is being disintermediated. And it makes some people very uncomfortable. It really does. And I understand that because once you get going as an artist, you want to know that you can recreate the process so that you don't have to worry about when you're going to eat next. And I've seen in our union, I've seen in our production process, I've seen, you know, everything change in the last 10 years and everything getting compressed. I mean, you never would have had Dustin Hoffman on a television show or Glenn Close on a television show or, you know, all of the, and what that does is it pushes everybody else like me down the food chain, right? Mm. Because you've got these huge stars who are now taking up the space that was somebody lower on the, anyway, I just think that there are so many options now for people to do self-production, to change to, as you said, user-centric production, you know, there's just been never, and it's never been cheaper either. I mean, look at all the things that you can do with a smartphone, right? Absolutely. And you need one of those to make a phone call, but you also have that camera that you need in your pocket. So you buy, you know, maybe $200 worth of accessories and you're done. You're good. You're off to the races.
No, you're absolutely right. Hey, David, it's been a fantastic time talking with you today, and there's so much good information that you're providing our audience. I'd love for you to be able to come back around whenever the tutorial, the classes that you have are online. I certainly would recommend some of our own clients take some of those classes. Yeah. Yeah, you've got so many fun points that I wanted to reference. I want to bring one to the attention of our users and watchers and listeners. You got cast for your first paid role at the age of 50.
Yeah,
that's very, very cool because that means that at any point in time, you can jump in and change into a different career path, right? I mean, you put a lot of work before that, yeah. Obviously. But, I mean, it's great to be able to see that next step in anybody's career path. Is it, and you took it, you ran with it, you sharpened your axe, obviously, and you got in there. And it's a great story to be able to tell. Can you give our viewers and our listeners just a thought about just doing that?
So I think second, third, fourth, fifth acts in life are everywhere around us. You know, look at, I just watched the premiere of Shark Tank and Richard Branson was one of the guest sharks. You know, he's reinvented himself 50 times in his life because he's a serial opportunist. He's a serial entrepreneur for sure, but he loves adventure. He loves new things. He loves doing things that are different and fun and exciting. And I think that if you give yourself some credit and say, you know, I've been this for a long time. Like for me, I've been in radio for a long time. I'd really like to try that. If you can go beyond that, I really like to, as opposed to I'm going to, and then beyond I'm going to I am, you know, it's a big step for a lot of people. And sometimes it affects the people around you, and sometimes it affects you. I have a feeling, though, that within us, because we're able to create a first act, you know, oh, I went to college to be an accountant, but now I'd like to be an actor. Or I started in social media, but now I'd actually like to be a trainer and a coach. Making those leaps require believing in yourself. And if I don't do anything in my courses, the one thing that I make sure I do is to give my clients the tools they need to believe in themselves. I say my main job is to manage, manage the success of your career, right? Is to sort of manage that process. It's to defend, to defend the success of your career. And by that, I mean, you know, pushing you towards things that work better and waving you off of things that don't work so well that you might think logically would work, like, you know, being connected to the camera. So, you know, if you have a coach who can help you with that, it's kind of, and I did, I had Howard Fine as my acting coach and Patrick Tucker with Secrets of Screen Acting and so many other people that sort of contributed to what I do. Many of the casting directors here in town have been just stellar about sharing their knowledge and so on. And so I think that if you really want to do something, having the belief that you can is more than half the battle. The other half of the battle is actually executing. A lot of people go, yeah, I'm going to do that. Oh, what's the new television show I want to watch? Mm-hmm. My email, you know, we have all these distractions, but be focused, be focused. You know, you don't have to be hyper focused. It's like, oh, if I don't do this, you know, just give yourself a fighting chance.
Fantastic. Hey, we want to promote a number of different websites for you, and certainly VOToGoGo.com. That's your voiceover tutorial and training program. CameraReadyU.com is where you're actually providing a good deal of understanding of camera presence, and you're about to open up the online classes. Or it's not going to be online, but it's going to be.
No, they'll be online.
Oh, fantastic.
The way it'll work is the there'll be video lessons, and you'll actually create videos, and then we'll have a live Zoom. Actually, we use Zoom for what we do, a live Zoom viewing party. Mm-hmm. So you'll do a small video. Like the first video I have you do is just start the camera. Hi, I'm David. Just say your name and then stop the camera. And I want to see your finger going up to stop the button and come away as you started. And then we'll show you how to make those things better. And over the number of modules in the thing, we'll do more and more with that video. Befores and afters, and we'll show people how that works. So that's how that process is going to be in CameraReadyU.com.
So that's CameraReadyU.com. Also, Rehearsal.pro.
Oh,
tell us about that real quick.
Well, I was asked to audition for a part with a very short deadline, like an hour or so. And I was at my agent's office, and my normal process, I would go home and record the lines and learn them, because you always want to be off book for an audition. And I couldn't. So I had to sit in my agent's office with my phone and voice memo and record the lines so that I could learn them driving down the 101 to Paramount to do the audition. And, you know, voice memo's play button is soft. So I'm like weaving in and out of traffic looking for the play button. Like, there has to be an app for this. And there, there was. But it was horrible. And so I thought, okay, there's got to be a market for helping actors learn their lines, explore their scenes, be off book so they don't have to worry about that sort of thing. Hmm. So it's now an industry standard. We have like 150,000 users and some of the biggest names in show business and students, all the way down to students and you know, amateur actors use the app. And that's what Rehearsal is. It's called Rehearsal Pro, and it's at rehearsal.pro.
That's great. What a fantastic utility. To all of our listeners and watchers, you certainly want to check out David's Twitter feed at DHLawrenceXVII and certainly Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all with the same branding, except for Facebook, David H. Lawrence, XVII. I got to ask about the 17th. Are there 16 other iterations of you?
Yes, there are. When I was asked to join the union, You have to choose a unique name. It can't, like, I couldn't choose Dustin Hoffman. Not that I wanted to, but there were plenty of other David Lawrences already in the union. Every single one of the iterations of my name, my middle name, my middle initial, I certainly didn't want to be D.H. Lawrence, right? So I'm trying to figure this out, and I'm looking at my computer as I'm on the phone with the union, and I'm staring at my IMDb page, which at the time had me as David Lawrence, David H. Lawrence, and in parentheses, because there were 16 other David Lawrences on IMDb, XVII. So I'm like, just joking. I said to the woman, what about David H. Lawrence, XVII? And there was this long pause, and she's like, fine. And it turned out, you know, it was a risk, but it's turned out to be something that has been. Now, I created a whole backstory that I send to fans who ask about it. It goes back to the mid-1500s in Scotland and a bunch of humor in there. But the truth of the matter is that I needed a unique name, and that was it. So
beautiful.
Really? I'll say, yeah, but remember, I'm in show business, so I lie. I make stuff up.
That's true.
Well, David, thank you so much for your time today. It was very entertaining, and love the insight, and certainly hope that all of our listeners and watchers pay attention to that, because they need to understand these are major concepts in how to project, how to place yourself in the camera and be able to be authentic. So we certainly ask everyone to play it and play it often. And on top of that, review this show, because we'll lift up our guests as they come on board and really give some great shout outs. So David, thank you so much for your time today. And we're certainly going to be watching from afar. Good luck in your career. And hopefully we can have you come back around with another segment and talk about your entire university online.
I'd be thrilled to do that. Thanks.
You're more than welcome. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening to Edge of the Web Radio, and a special thank you to our colleagues at Site Strategics. Be sure to check out all our must-see videos and much more of the insider information over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. We'll actually talk to you next week. Who's on deck next week?
Next week we have Sujan Patel, and we're doing John Mueller, an extra episode next
week. That's right. So for all of the Edge listeners, we got John Mueller coming up in the house, the head of Google Analytics, jumping on board at Edge of the Web. So we're very excited, and as well as Sujan Patel. It's going to be a fantastic week. So tune in to the live cast and ask your questions of John Mueller. Is that the 10th?
It is the 10th, yes.
10th at 11 a.m. or something like that. So a different time, but check it out. We certainly want to have our SEO geek on as we're talking to John Mueller. Thanks so much. Remember, do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.